1045 CT Hayward. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Hours after the dignified transfer of three U.S. service members killed in last week's drone strike in Jordan, the U.S. retaliated, striking more than 80 targets in Syria and Iraq. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said the U.S. does not want any war or escalation, but is also not done retaliating.
There will be additional response actions taken in coming days, and I think that's about as specific as I want to be about it.
Iraq says 16 people were killed in the country in the strikes. President Biden's on the ballot today in South Carolina. It's the state's Democratic primary. There could be an immigration deal taking shape in Washington. A bipartisan group of senators say they have an agreement on border spending. It also includes money for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. It's not clear if it would pass the House. Preparations are underway in California as authorities predict what could be a historic rainstorm. This is ABC News. Surprise was the reaction to Friday's very strong jobs report.
The U.S. economy gained 353,000 new jobs in January, way above expectations. Wages up more than 4% compared to this time last year. Acting Secretary of Labor Julie Hsu crediting Bidenomics and promising more jobs are on the way.
The shovels are going to hit the ground. Factories are still being built. And when they open, we're going to see, I think, further strength.
But that strength may give the Federal Reserve pause as it considers easing inflation-fighting interest rates. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Hollywood paying tribute to Carl Weathers.
Come on, get your head on your shoulders, man. Think about the fight.
From Rocky III, he was best known for his role as Apollo Creed in the Rocky movies. Weathers, who also played linebacker in the NFL, died at 76. His family issued a statement saying that Carl Weathers died peacefully in his sleep. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
For the Love of Democracy Tour 2024 continues, thanks to our fine sponsor, Chance Design Build. Trudy lands in Las Vegas for the Nevada presidential primary, a competing GOP caucus, and all the build-up to Super Bowl 58. Tune in for special events broadcast live from the Vegas Strip. From the Nevada primary Tuesday, February 6th through Super Bowl Friday, Trudy brings you on-the-ground coverage from a swing state that helped Joe Biden win the presidency.
It's 2024. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you live across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Jane Matt Nair.
And I'm Greg Bach.
Join us Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon as we break down the news and share some laughs along the way.
We're talking to politicians, we're talking to community leaders, and we're talking to anyone who has a story.
And we occasionally get a visit from an umbrella cockatoo. Join us for Matt Nair on Air Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to noon.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Artificial intelligence could be used to meddle in this year's elections. As Eric Tegedoff reports, it could cause voters to mistrust all information, even the truth.
Before the New Hampshire primary, a robocall imitating President Joe Biden called voters and told them not to vote. It's seen as a potential preview of what voters could be in for as the 2024 general election approaches. Rachel Ori is the Senior Associate Director of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Elections Project. She says AI could have other consequences.
Our bigger concern is what's known as a liar's dividend, that the presence of false information makes voters trust any information less.
Ori says the past few years have seen a near constant assault on accurate voting information, which has made it challenging for good information to reach voters. Ori says AI could supercharge the misinformation campaigns that have existed for years. However, election officials across the country have a leg up going into the 2024 vote.
Election officials and voting advocates around the country are sort of well prepared to mitigate and respond to increases in misinformation because they spent the last couple of years flexing that muscle and learning how to respond to misinformation and election denial campaigns.
Ori says election officials should have a plan ready to respond to AI misinformation campaigns. She says there likely aren't any regulatory options available at the moment to stop these operations.
Technology is maybe growing faster than the regulatory tools we have available. So at present, it seems difficult to find a policy that the government could adopt and make these robocalls impossible.
Ori says another concern is targeted campaigns that use a voter's personal information to persuade them not to vote, although there aren't any documented instances of this happening yet. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. More and more sun as the day goes along. Today, we'll see a high near 42 degrees. For tonight, some patchy fog again. Otherwise, a low near 21. For Sunday, some patchy fog to start the day, then mostly sunny with highs in the mid-40s. For Monday, partly sunny and a high near 47.
It's 24 right now.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. Hey, we're gonna have a
good day. This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Helen Brand. Today, I'm going to be doing a two-part series. Actually, this is part two of a two-part series, easier said than done, on how transportation impacts caregivers across the state. It's something that probably most of us don't even think about. But according to the Wisconsin DOT, approximately 31% of all Wisconsinites do not drive. This means that approximately 1.8 million people throughout the state rely on someone else to get them to where they need to go. So what does that have to do with caregiving? Well, that means for the most part, I mean, I know not in all cases, but for the most part, that there are 1.8 million people in Wisconsin responsible for getting somewhere else, for getting someone where they need to go on any given day. And who do you think those 1.8 million people are transporting people around? For the most part, you guessed it, caregivers. So I don't know if I could name a single caregiver that isn't impacted in some way when it comes to transportation. So today I have a handful of wonderful people with me, and we are going to be talking about transportation and how this issue really impacts all Wisconsinites, whether you're a caregiver or not. We'll also be talking about the needs and barriers of caregivers in rural areas, the mental load that comes with coordinating transportation, and what the future of transportation needs to look like in Wisconsin to support family caregivers. Joining me now is Tamara Jackson from the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. Welcome, Tamara.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Would you mind telling listeners what your role is?
Yeah, my organization, the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities, exists to talk about what policy, how policies could look like to help people with intellectual and developmental disabilities have the same kind of choices and outcomes and in their lives as able-bodied people. And for so many of us, we know that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities rely on family caregivers to do a whole suite of things. And one of them is oftentimes transportation. It's something that many caregivers don't even realize they're doing, but every time their person needs to get to a medical appointment or physical therapy or occupational therapy or back and forth to all sorts of different activities, oftentimes it's the family caregiver who is making it happen or not. So a lot of the family caregiving time that people with disabilities rely on is really getting rides. And so They're one of many different populations in the state who are what we term non-drivers, people who do not drive. And they certainly are a group that relies a lot on the people in their lives around them to get them where they need to go.
Tamara, when I was researching this issue, your name pops up all over. What is some of the work that you've done or are currently doing around non-driver transportation?
Well, I have the privilege. Our Department of Transportation has been very forward-thinking and responsive to advocates. When we said, hey, there's a whole population of people that we're not thinking about when it comes to transportation, they listened, and they actually formed a statewide non-driver advisory committee, which I am one of the co-chairs of, as well as one of the guests you're having on this program, Denise Jess, with the Wisconsin Council on the Blind and Visually Impaired. And I think that has really been an important way to have conversations about the great diversity of people who are non-drivers or are likely to become non-drivers over their lifetime, and to just talk about how our current transportation system and policies really were designed with the assumption that everybody has a car and is able to transport themselves, when that's never been true and is growing more and more true as time goes on.
I couldn't agree with you more. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Next, I want to introduce Nick Musson, the transportation specialist with Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources. Most of the time spent driving in the car, you know, really isn't a big deal. It's about being mindful on, you know, planning your day and taking into consideration the needs of others and where they need to go. For many of us, it's that mental load that goes along with that responsibility. And when I say mental load, I mean not the physical task, but rather overseeing of those tasks. It's being in charge of the never-ending to-do list items, constantly running in your head, remembering what needs to be done, making the phone call, sending the emails, filling out the paperwork, delegating the tax, ensuring that everything actually happens right. So in regards to transportation, for a lot of us, it's managing those logistics involved. And you must also carry that mental load even when you're not driving. I mean, how many people feel like they can't go too far from home or be gone too long because they may need to take their loved one somewhere? So, Nick, can you tell me a little bit more about what your role is at GWAR, and why do you think that transportation is an issue that we need to be talking about more?
Sure. Thank you. So GWAR is a nonprofit agency committed to supporting successful delivery of aging programs and services across 70 counties and 11 tribes. So we cover the majority of Wisconsin. And our mission is to deliver innovative support to lead agencies as we work together to promote, protect, and enhance the well-being of older people in Wisconsin. So specifically, my role as a transportation specialist is to provide the aging units within GWAR service area with transportation technical assistance and representation within the transportation sector. And you might ask, what does that look like? Well, I provide transportation orientation to new aging directors and staff. I help with state and federal funding applications and reporting. So there's a number of different funding sources out there that come into these different aging units throughout the counties and the tribes that help provide and support transportation programs. I also advocate on behalf of older adults by participating in a number of statewide committees, one of which is the Wisconsin Non-Driver Advisory Committee, which Tammy did mention previously, and I am a member of that committee. We also are monitoring state and federal legislation to ensure our network is informed about the issues important to them. So we work really hard to connect with all of the aging units across the state to make sure they have the resources they need to be aware and to conduct their programs and to serve older adults and help them get the services that they need. And this includes transportation.
So if you're not really familiar with Greater Wisconsin Agency on Aging Resources, which I'm not at the point where I'm supporting my parents or have to reach out and learn more quite yet. A little bit on behalf of my son with autism. But if I was to call the local ADRC and say, you know, I'm caring for my mother and transportation is an issue, what would they do or what would they look like? Can you kind of walk me through that a little bit or give some examples?
Yeah, exactly. So if they were to call into a local ADRC or an aging unit anywhere in the state and they were to ask for some transportation assistance, a lot of times these aging units get funding to come support their transportation programs. These programs are dedicated to older adults and individuals with disabilities. So what they would do is connect them to these programs so they can get the transportation they need to get to where they have to go. Right. Some of these programs are paid drivers. Some of them are volunteer drivers, but they all play a role in connecting the individual to the destination that they're looking to get connected to.
Gotcha. Okay. And I guess my question for you, I was going to ask it a little bit later, but here it is. Let's talk about rural. I mean, I put a post out on Facebook just trying to get some feedback from caregivers about some of the barriers and issues around rural transportation. And I got a lot of people that replied. You know, one woman out in Richland Center said, you know, I have to drive an hour into Madison for every appointment that my loved one needs. And if the road's bad or something comes up, that means getting a hotel room and spending the night if they can't make it back. So I want to spend more time on this, but what do you see as some of the biggest barriers when it comes to caregiving in rural areas?
So when it comes to rural areas, their transportation is really hard to come by, right? And when you could look at urban areas, there's plenty of public transportation. It might not always be perfect, but especially when you get out in these rural areas, there's very little options when it comes to transportation. So when we're thinking about transportation in the rural areas, the programs that I just talked about, those transportation programs, are sometimes the only programs that are providing services in these areas. And again, these are paid and volunteer drivers, right? So it's difficult to get complete coverage in these areas. And this is all that there's available to be able to provide transportation for these individuals. So it's important that we support these services, especially volunteer drivers. There's lots of barriers when it comes to this kind of services. When it comes to volunteer drivers, there could be things like barriers when it comes to insurance. You know, sometimes insurance, the personal driver's insurance is not covered because the volunteer driver is accepting mileage reimbursement. And the insurance company looks at this as compensation. And they wanted to lump this personal driver into a commercial policy. And that what results of that is that they're either their service or their policy gets increased and moved into a commercial policy, or they have to quit. They have to quit volunteering because they don't have any other options.
Well, and I know that there's some other barriers around being a volunteer driver as well, and I want to talk about those when we come back.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
The story of Black History Month starts in Chicago.
It's 1915 and thousands are there to celebrate. 50 years since the Emancipation Proclamation and the end of slavery. The gathering also inspires civic organizations to uncover the many achievements of Black citizens. By 1926, the celebration of African American history is official. This also is a time for rising racial pride. The Black middle class is expanding, and industrial cities like Milwaukee are luring African Americans with good jobs. There's so much more to tell you. Listen for the next Black History Month story here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. And today I am talking about how transportation impacts caregivers. And I don't know if there's a caregiver out there that isn't impacted by transportation in some way, shape, or form, even if it's not physically driving somebody, it's coordinating it with somebody else and handling all of the logistics involved around that. Before the break, I was talking to Nick, who works as a transportation specialist at GWAR, which is Greater Wisconsin Area Agency on Aging Resources, that kind of oversees the ADRCs and what else is it, Nick?
Aging units.
In the aging units throughout the state. And so we're talking about transportation in rural areas and how it can be extremely difficult for caregivers to get their loved ones where they need to go, and how there are very limited options if you live in a rural area to get your transportation needs met. One of the ways that you can get those needs met is by having volunteer drivers, wonderful people that volunteer their time driving people to where they need to go. And this is so crucial, not only to get, you know, somebody from point A to point B, but that time also gives the caregiver some respite. You know, it gives them time to take a nap, run to the store, do whatever they need to do. And, you know, quite frankly, it gives the care recipient some respite from the caregiver if they're always stuck together, right? It's another person that they can spend some time with. So there's additional value there besides getting people from point A to point B. But it's become increasingly difficult to get these volunteer drivers. And Nick was saying one of the reasons is insurance. You said that they want to, insurance companies want to classify you as a commercial driver. Did I get that right?
Yeah, exactly. So the insurance companies want to classify these volunteer drivers. They want to classify their personal insurance as a commercial activity, right? So they're lumping these personal drivers into other transportation network companies. These are companies like Uber and Lyft who are getting paid to provide those services. So these volunteer drivers who are only getting reimbursed for their mileage are getting lumped into this category. And as a result, the insurance companies are raising their rates and moving them into a commercial policy, like a driver for Uber and Lyft. And that doesn't necessarily make sense because they're only accepting mileage reimbursement. They're really not getting compensated above their reimbursement.
Well, and I want to talk about that reimbursement too, because you're using that word generously, right? I mean, if I'm understanding this correctly, we're currently reimbursing at 14 cents a mile. Is that right?
Yeah, the charitable rate right now is 14 cents per mile. And a lot of the agencies that have volunteer driver programs that work with volunteer drivers just feel like that's not enough, right? So they go above and beyond that 14 cents charitable mileage rate. And actually they pay something closer to the standard mileage rate, which is about 65.5 cents per mile. But that kind of backs the volunteer driver into a little bit of a predicament, because anything over that 14 cents per mile then is considered income. And then the volunteer driver has to report that on their taxes. So when we're talking about volunteer driving and these volunteers being these individuals that are carrying, using their own equipment, you know, there's some barriers. There's some barriers because a lot of times they get increased premiums from insurance because they're considered in this livery, livery service, this Lyft or Uber type commercial services, or they're having to pay taxes on anything over that 14 cents per mile. And those are all barriers deterring volunteer drivers.
Well, I know the 14 cents a mile issue, there's some legislation proposed on that. Is that correct? We're working as a state to change that.
The 14 cents per mile, the charitable mileage rate, is actually a federal issue. And right now there's some legislation and seeks to increase the charitable mileage rate for the nonprofit volunteer drivers delivering people products. They are proposing to increase that charitable mileage rate from 14 cents to the 65.5 cents per mile. And that's the standard business rate. If passed into law, that legislation will keep the rate volunteer drivers can receive or deduct on their taxes aligned with the business mileage rate. So, you know, that is very important because right now the standard rate, the business rate, adjusts with inflation. And so we need that to take place for the mileage rate. And this will put that on a level playing field with that and really help those volunteer drivers out.
I agree. And I had Janet Zander on the show a while back, who is another strong advocate. And I recall saying, I don't even know if you can ride a bike for 14 cents a mile in this day and age. So I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense. I want to move on to Denise Jess, but I have one last question for you, Nick. In regards to the insurance, what do we need to do there?
Yeah, the insurance is a state level issue. And so what we need to do is we need to contact our state legislators and ask them to change the law to protect our volunteer drivers from insurance companies classifying volunteer driving as commercial activity. So it's really, it really comes down to all of us working together and connecting with our legislators and let them know that we need to protect our volunteer drivers. And I would add, when we talked about that federal legislation, I just want to note that legislation is the Volunteer Driver Tax Appreciation Act. So both of those things we need to do is reach out to our legislators at the state and the federal level and let them know that we need some change.
Absolutely. And it's a hard thing to ask caregivers. I know they're stretched thin and time is always an issue, but these legislators, they don't know our needs, right? Until somebody comes and tells them, and preferably a lot of people, right? A lot of people that's what perks their ears, because now we've got lots of voters making requests and letting them know what needs to be done. So thank you so much. My next guest is Denise Jess. Denise, can you let listeners know a little bit about your role, and then when we come back, I want to talk more about your personal experience because you are a non-driver. But let's start with, what is your role and what are you currently doing to address some of these non-driver issues?
Yeah, thanks, Eliza. Thanks so much for having me today. I am the executive director with the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired, and we are a statewide nonprofit organization with a mission to promote the dignity and empowerment of people living with vision loss. And concretely, that means that we teach people the skills of living our best lives with blindness. That's really, there's a whole skill set, and particularly for our older adults who are experiencing vision loss later in life, learning those skills allows people to live independently, comfortably, and have a satisfying quality of life. Blindness is not the end of the road. We also do a significant amount of advocacy work because many of the barriers that we experience as people with blindness are rooted in policy. And so if we had necessary policy changes, including transportation changes, where we built a systemic and system-wide way of thinking about transportation, then that barrier would be dramatically reduced. I'm a policymaker. I serve on the City of Madison Transportation Commission. I work with Tammy and Nick on the Non-Driver Advisory Committee, and I also work at this level on a federal level. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Hayward's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Hours after the dignified transfer of three U.S. service members killed in last week's drone strike in Jordan, the U.S. retaliated, striking more than 80 targets in Syria and Iraq. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said the U.S. does not want any war or escalation, but is also not done retaliating.
There will be additional response actions taken in coming days, and I think that's about as specific as I want to be about it.
Iraq says 16 people were killed in the country in the strikes. President Biden's on the ballot today in South Carolina. It's the state's Democratic primary. There could be an immigration deal taking shape in Washington. A bipartisan group of senators say they have an agreement on border spending. It also includes money for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. It's not clear if it would pass the House. Preparations are underway in California as authorities predict what could be a historic rainstorm. This is ABC News.
Hope to rebound. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. In men's college basketball, the number 6 ranked Wisconsin Badgers lost Thursday night to Nebraska 80-72 in overtime. Matt LePay with the call on the Badgers radio network.
Hepburn with 7 seconds left. Chucky, a deep three. It's off the rim, no good. Gary the rebound, and Nebraska wins it in overtime by 8. And another court storm here in Lincoln as the 6th-ranked team in the country goes down.
Now, Wisconsin has a chance to hold on to that spot in the top 10 when they host the number 2-ranked Purdue Boilermakers Sunday at noon. Head coach Greg Gard asked, will his team need to cut down on the turnovers against Purdue?
Yeah, that combined with bad shot selection and no play in the paint. You know, we don't get to the free throw line, and we aren't going to get fouled when you're consistently shooting jump shots.
That's the Badgers head basketball coach, Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. More and more sun as the day goes along. Today, we'll see a high near 42 degrees. For tonight, some patchy fog again. Otherwise, a low near 21. For Sunday, some patchy fog to start the day, then mostly sunny with highs in the mid-40s. For Monday, partly sunny and a high near 47.
It's 24 right now.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
The story of Black History Month starts in Chicago. It's 1915, and thousands are there to celebrate. 50 years since the Emancipation Proclamation and the end of slavery. The gathering also inspires civic organizations to uncover the many achievements of Black citizens. By 1926, the celebration of African American history is official. This also is a time for rising racial pride. The Black middle class is expanding, and industrial cities like Milwaukee are luring African Americans with good jobs. There's so much more to tell you. Listen for the next Black History Month story here on Civic Media. I'm Earl.
Rice Lake's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I am talking about transportation and how it impacts caregivers. I was speaking with Denise Jess, and I apologize, Denise. I asked you a question right before we went into break and didn't even give you enough time to answer it. That's on me. But I wanted to hear a little bit about your personal story. Being blind, obviously, you're a non-driver, at least. No offense, but I hope so. Right? Okay. So, yeah. All right. So what is it like? What are some of the barriers? What do you think we need to do as a state? What has your experience been?
Sure. So as a non-driver, every decision in my life is shaped by that. So on the macro, the big picture level, and on the micro every day. So where I chose to go to college, where I chose to live, the career that I went into, I have declined jobs or accepted jobs based on, you know, what transportation was going to look like. Transportation every day has an impact on my family dynamics. You know, how frequently do I ask my wife for a ride without stressing that relationship? Or other family members or friends. There's an economic cost to being a non-driver. You know, you're either paying in time or you're paying in money. So if I have a medical appointment, I can take the half a day or three quarters of a day off of work and bus to that appointment, bus back from that appointment, I'm paying in time. Or if I don't want to pay in time, I'm paying maybe $75 round trip to get to and from that medical appointment. So every single day is shaped by arranging and thinking about transportation, and that includes the pedestrian infrastructure. So I want to make sure that we touch on that in this conversation, because for many of us, biking or walking is part of how we complete or do a trip. And so in many communities, including rural, people with disabilities, blindness, older adults are trying to walk to places in order to get things done, especially if there's limited or no transportation. And we need continual effort on creating pedestrian infrastructure, connected sidewalk networks, easy street crossings, reduced speed, things like that, so that our roadways are safe for all abilities, all users.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, Denise, because I have a 20-year-old son on the autism spectrum who most likely will never drive. And we are blessed to be living in the city of Middleton, which is pretty walkable. So he does walk, you know, everywhere he needs to go. He pretty much walks. So that, as a caregiver, even for me, has a whole nother level of worry, right? Is he obeying the traffic signs? Does he know when to cross? Does he look, you know, all of that, just getting there safely. And some of my fears I just let go, but it's still always out there, even when it comes down to walking. Tamara, I really want to ask you, we had this conversation earlier and you just articulated it so beautifully. What does transportation mean to everyone? You know, I'm putting it in context to caregiving, but it really impacts everyone. Can you speak to that?
Well, you know, we all start our lives as non-drivers and we will likely end up there. And I think when you have a society that has built its assumptions around everybody being able to get where they need to go on their schedule via their own personal vehicle, you leave out a lot of people. And we don't have systems where people who are non-drivers can actively get where they need to go on their schedule. And you've just heard Denise talk about arranging her whole life in terms of where do you live, what jobs do you take, how do you make everyday decisions that are totally revolved around the transportation options that are or aren't available. And that sometimes determines what you can and cannot do. And in rural areas, you know, we talk about transportation, like non-driver transportation, it's really important to understand that there's only 81 public transportation systems in the state, and they don't all look alike. Some of them are cab systems. Some of them are bus systems. The bus systems don't always go where you want to go on your schedule. You know, there's a lot of places, most places, where there aren't really any other options except for some very small programs that have limited funding and actually might only be available to certain populations of people. You know, the requirements of how you access those transportation is limited by who, if you fall into a specific category. So when I think about, like, what does it mean if you are a driver and all of a sudden that you're not, right? By temporary circumstance or more permanent condition, it really is life-changing. And for a lot of the caregivers out there right now, you are filling in the gaps of systems that don't exist for non-drivers, and you may not even be aware of it. Your ability to drive is supplementing a system and transportation network that has not thought about or been centered around non-drivers. And non-drivers are a big group. They look different. There are people, there are kids who are under age 16, they still got to go places, right? Yep. Every schlepper in a minivan, I am one.
Yep.
We're all there. There are kids that are delaying or never getting a license. Part of that is costs of vehicles and insurance costs are a thing.
Right.
Driver's education. So there are people who are never becoming drivers. There are lots of people where ownership of a car is not an affordability issue. Lots of low-income working people who are reliant on public transportation, a lot of paid caregivers who are reliant on public transportation. And then, of course, as we age, the average man outlives their driving years by about 7 years, and the average woman is about 10 years. So, you know, when you think about people who are drivers now, who are likely going to be non-drivers for potentially a significant portion of your life. If that happened today, for most drivers, they wouldn't know where to begin in order to keep navigating their life. And it's something that Denise has always lived with, right. That mental load of trying to figure out, can I do something? How do I do something? Do I have plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D in the work as things fall apart? And we haven't done the work to understand that from a policy perspective, we're all going to be in a situation at some point, very young, very old, some accident in the middle, where we are not drivers. And that will limit our lives unless we do something very different.
Right. And you're talking about these 81 fragmented systems. And one thing that we didn't even mention is that if your county or area has one of these systems, it can perhaps get you around within that area. But then we also have the crossing the county lines and the law. You know, what if somebody in a rural area would like to go see a loved one that requires getting a plane? You know, now they have to figure out how are they going to get to an airport or somewhere close to them. There's millions of examples, right, where you end up crossing the county line. Nick, how does your agency handle that?
Well, typically when we get a individual that calls in and is looking for help, especially when it involves crossing boundaries, we usually have to work with a lot of the either the municipalities or mobility managers in the area. And mobility managers are really charged with helping individuals make that connection from point A to point B. And they help those individuals connect all those different services to get to that final destination. And a lot of times we have to actually piecemeal it together. The mobility manager will have to come in and work with one agency to get them so far and maybe connect them to another to get them to the rest of the way.
Wow. And is that something that, I'm just curious, happens a lot? Is this a struggle that you see a lot of people going through, or is this an occasional need? I'm just wondering how much time and resource really goes into piecemealing this together.
I think it happens quite a bit. There's always an occasion or an appointment that someone needs to get to that falls outside of these boundaries, whether it's a municipality or a county. And a medical facility sometimes could be a number of counties away, right? So this does happen, I wouldn't say a lot, but it does happen every now and then where these individuals need to travel through these different boundaries. And sometimes we all have to work together to make that happen.
Well, and I could see that need increasing in the future. You know, there's a lot of smaller rural hospitals that are really struggling, that are closing. You know, I know out in Richland Center, they said, well, first, the only dentist that accepted, you know, Medicaid, Medicare, what have you, is gone. And now the eye clinic's gone. And, you know, things are disappearing. So people are having to travel further to get where they need to go. I'm curious for all of you, what your thoughts are. Where do we go from here? What do we need to focus on? Let me start with this. If we had maybe a magic wand, what would that look like?
I can kick it off. This is Denise. It would be making sure that we actually have transportation systems. So there, one of the pieces would be legislation that allows for better cross-municipal transportation. You know, the medical things that you're talking about are very true, but there's also needing to get your ID updated so that you can vote. And you have to go to maybe a DMV that's several miles away. And so you've got to figure out how you get there. You know, one of the things that's not often thought about with the non-driver is that we would actually just like to do things beyond just those necessary appointments, like going to visit family or visiting a kid that's in college. And so that lack of cross-municipal transportation has impact on our social emotional well-being as well. So that legislation that allows for cross-municipal transportation to occur is incredibly, incredibly critical.
I agree in that. I was thinking about that in the back of my head as we were talking earlier. You know, we're talking about the essential medical appointments and things that need to be done, but that's not the only reason we get in a car. I'm in the car every day, and I rarely go to the doctor. So it's all of those other things keeping you connected to your community, to your family, to your employment, and just the social engagement. They most always require transportation. Now, you all three are part of the DOT non-driver initiative. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I was reading some of the minutes of the notes that I found online. I like to call myself the ultimate Google stalker. I can find anything. But it was fascinating. But tell me a little bit more about that. Tamara, what are your main goals with the non-driver initiative?
I mean, I think there's a tremendous opportunity to really center our thinking around non-drivers. And when you start thinking about, okay, how does this impact somebody who doesn't drive? All of a sudden, the world and your planning and how you're investing looks very different. Does it work for the people who have the biggest barriers? And it turns out, and we know this from disability world, that when you improve accessibility for the folks who have the hardest time, you actually make it better for everyone. And I think that's been a real shift in thinking, not only with the department, but it's a shift that needs to happen at our local levels too, because the proportion of people who are going to be non-drivers is increasing. It's not decreasing. And that's not only a demographic trend, it's also a financial trend. And you're right, you know, the places that people need to go, grocery stores, drug stores, all sorts of places, you know, your life cannot be on hold and limited if just because you cannot drive a car, because that's going to be a true statement for more and more people in a state. And the time to plan is now.
And we're going to talk about that right when we come back.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You are listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I am talking about transportation. And you may think, what does that have to do with caregiving? Well, I can tell you personally from my world, it had just about everything to do with caregiving, because the job that I took and the work that I did and how I scheduled my day always kind of revolved around my son and his needs. So it impacts a lot of caregivers. And to make change, like I said earlier, there has to be community involvement. I mean, I would love to think our legislators just lay in bed at night and try to dream up ways to help Wisconsinites, but unfortunately, I don't think that's how it happens. It takes voices, and it takes a lot of voices, and that's kind of what I want to talk about. Denise, can you share some of your thoughts on local involvement?
Yeah, I think, you know, if we've got 1.8 million non-drivers, if we have that much energy going into advocating on these issues, I think we would see something different. So getting involved at the local level is a great place to start, and thinking about where is it that you have passion. So, you know, Liza, you talked about your son and his ability to walk and your concerns about his safety. So, you know, a great inroad is to become a pedestrian advocate and start reaching out to your local elected officials, going to, you know, meetings and speaking about, you know, this intersection right here is extremely dangerous. If we did X, Y, Z, it would be safer, and here's who would benefit from that. Or talking with your transportation network folks about, you know, if we did a bus stop here and here, this is what how that would be beneficial. It's really got to be real people's lives in front of policymakers and decision makers to have this issue come alive. And so if everybody just took some time to do that in their lives, we would create a potential groundswell that helps move the dial on this issue and challenges the assumption that everybody drives to get to where they need to go. That's still a dominant paradigm in our communities.
Well, and I like how you said, okay, so if you're talking about pedestrian issues, that's assuming that there's things in place. You're talking about bus routes, that's assuming things are in place. Nick, when you live in rural Wisconsin, there's nothing in place. You know, I would imagine some people don't even know what to be asking for. Can you speak to that at all about how we can create some momentum, movement, and change to help support these caregivers and others in rural areas?
Yeah, to add on to what Denise was talking about, participating at your local level, I think there's plenty of opportunity, especially in rural areas. There's regional planning commissions out there, and they're in charge of putting together long-range transportation plans, which takes into account all forms of transportation and non-drivers as well. So I think that there's plenty of opportunities if someone wanted to participate within these different planning processes. Each, you know, counties and municipalities have comprehensive plans. So I think there's plenty of opportunity to take advantage of these different planning efforts that take place and really voice your opinion and start that movement and talk about these issues. I think these are perfect places to be able to connect with your local representatives and make sure they're aware of what you want to see for the future.
Well, I like that. Voice your opinion and tell your story, because some people are probably thinking, oh yeah, sure, I'll join a transportation committee in my free time. Yeah, right. But really, it's just making those phone calls and saying, hey, you're missing us. You're missing a big part of the population. I'm calling. I'm telling you what it looks like and what it means to me and my family. Tamara, what's your take on that?
So I think I'll talk about two things. And the first of all, I think your comments about elevating the issue and reminding people that non-drivers not only are here, but they are a big part of the population is half the battle. I mean, most of the planning that has happened in the last 75 years has happened without non-drivers at the table, because guess what? They couldn't get to the meetings, right? And it was an amazing revelation. We had a conversation with a number of planners, and you know, they talked about, well, we've done all this process about, and these issues have never come up. And then all of a sudden the planner was like, oh, but all of us, we all drove to the meeting. So, right. You know, thinking about who you're missing when you don't think about asking the question of, okay, now what does this mean if somebody doesn't drive? That is an important thing that caregivers can do to tell their story, that might be an email or a phone call communication. And you may have to, like, there's power in reminding people that you've set up a process that is not accessible to a good part of the population who will be affected by your decisions, whether that's the local municipality or transportation planning or others. I think that's a really important reminder and a drumbeat that needs to keep going. And it leads into my second piece, which is, you know, it's not only we've built a system that assumes a car and doesn't think about non-drivers first and foremost. A lot of our other systems also don't think about people who don't have a car. I like to pick on medical professionals because we, you know, all have that experience of, well, here's your appointment time. And it's in the middle of the day of a first shift where absolutely anybody who works have to take time off and you don't get a choice and nobody asks how you're going to get there. Right? Or you have some sort of process that needs to happen within a certain time frame, and nobody's, you know, it's just assumed you'll be able to get there. This is another great opportunity to have a polite statement saying, hey, I'm a non-driver, or I'm a caregiver, and this appointment time means that I will have to drive across three counties to the regional medical facility. Could we maybe do all of our appointments back to back so I could make that trip once? Or could this be done in a different way? Is there a way we could think about designing this interaction so I can skip the trip? And I don't think that a lot of our systems have ever thought about that, because if somebody doesn't show up for an appointment, we just blame the person and we never think about why they're not there. And so often for non-drivers, the reason is their transportation fell apart and they couldn't get there. So it's time for all of us to really be thinking about, where do we keep having these conversations so that businesses understand this is something they need to build into their process, to their protocols, to the things that they do that help their business run better.
What an excellent point, Tamara. And I didn't even take into consideration the appointments and the businesses and how we can all really get together and brainstorm. How can we make, I was at a loss for words. How do we make life more accessible, right, to all, and to support the family caregivers that are dedicating their time and money to getting people to where they need to go? I just want to thank you all so much for being here today, and hopefully we can get some momentum on this issue.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Sawyer County's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Now, we tend not to think about now. We dream about tomorrow, relive yesterday. But right now in front of us is victory over cancer. Right now, cancer research funded by the V Foundation is leading to better treatments and saving lives. Victory over cancer is there for the taking by you, because today's cancer research is tomorrow's victory. Learn more at V.org.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian.